It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was scheduled to meet with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry today in Rome, where he is expected to request that the U.S. continue its years-long policy of vetoing resolutions related to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict at the United Nations Security Council. Mr. Netanyahu believes what's now at stake is a resolution at the UN to try to force Israel to accept the creation of a Palestinian state unilaterally and within a certain time frame. In Pittsburgh, meanwhile, J Street Chief of Staff Steve Krubner is preparing for a discussion on the U.S.-Israel relationship and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict at the Jewish Community Center in Squirrel Hill. Mr. Krubner has spent the past decade working on Middle East conflict resolution, including nearly 5 years in Israel. Prior to serving as Chief of Staff, he was J Street's Director of Israel and International Programs and oversaw efforts to highlight the support that exists in Israel for a two-state solution. Steve Krubner, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
The U.S. reportedly has not decided how to vote on this UN resolution, but Mr. Netanyahu says demands are being made of Israel without being made of the Palestinians, and that's why they oppose the resolution. What should the United States do here?
Well, the United States should definitely work with the international community on producing a resolution that advances the prospects for a two-state solution, which is both in Israel's interest, the Palestinians' interest, and certainly the U.S. national security interest. It's important to note that there is bias at the U.N. against Israel and a disproportionate focus on Israel. That said, the U.N. is an international body, and it does reflect the growing momentum in the international community in support of a Palestinian state and Palestinian statehood. And the U.S. should take advantage of that opportunity to input its own policies into whatever resolutions are being drafted and circulated.
J Street's work focuses on advocating for U.S. leadership as an essential part of the equation in resolving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Why is that? Has that calculation changed since Secretary Kerry's negotiations initiative broke down last May?
The calculation certainly hasn't changed. It's very, very unlikely that there's going to be significant momentum forward or movement forward toward a two-state solution without strong U.S. leadership. The politics on both sides, and we see it in the Israeli elections now, and we've certainly seen it among the Palestinian factions, the politics on both sides inhibit direct movement forward without an active third party. And the only viable third party right now is the United States. And so it's very important that we play a significant role in helping the parties to achieve what's in both of their interests, a two-state solution.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Our guest is J Street's Steve Krubner, who's speaking in Pittsburgh tonight. If you'd like to join our conversation, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. Email is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Again, 412-246-2002. What are your feelings about the idea of a two-state solution? Should there be a push for that coming from the United States? The upcoming Israel elections in March of next year, 2015, look to be what they're calling a change election, Steve. What makes these elections different from those in 2012?
Paul, in 2012, the prime minister then, Prime Minister Netanyahu, who is still the prime minister today, was seen as the only viable candidate for the prime ministership. So it was very likely that he was going to win. He formed a faction with another party, Israel Beitenu, strengthening the chances that he would win, and nobody really questioned what would happen. This election, there's a lot of movement toward a new prime minister, and blocs are forming on both sides, the left and the center-left, and even the center-right, to create significant challenge to the prime minister, and it's very likely that we will end this election with a new prime minister in Israel.
And is this a referendum on the two-state solution?
It's not a referendum on the two-state solution in terms of what voters are going to be thinking about when they're going to the ballots. It will certainly have a very significant impact on the likelihood of a two-state solution in the next several years. If this goes toward the center-left blocks or a center block, then we're likely to see movement toward a two-state solution. If it goes toward the right, which would be to the right of Prime Minister Netanyahu, it's unlikely that we'll see movement in the next several years.
Let's take a moment here to define two-state solution. I think we all have a general idea of what it means, but some different entities describe it differently. in the view of J Street, how do you define a two-state solution?
We define the two-state solution similarly to what I think the international consensus is, which is based on previous negotiations, previous agreements. So beginning with the Clinton parameters toward the end of the Clinton administration, or what's called the Geneva Accords, we define the two-state solution as based on the 1967 borders with land swaps. So there have to be land swaps to accommodate for some of the changes on the ground. But you're basically talking about the 1967 lines.
The war that occurred in 1967 and the borders that were left after that fight took place.
That's right.
So and when we talk about solution, we're talking about a solution to conflict. We're talking about a way of finding it seems at times like a pipe dream, but it's what everybody holds out hope for, that there is a lasting peace in the Middle East. This is the idea of this is creating a solution that is of appeal to all, and that everyone will agree to lay down their arms.
Right. I just want to
coexist.
I just want to clarify the lines. The 1967 lines are the lines that existed prior to the Six-Day War, prior to the War of 1967. So the armistice lines of the 1949 end of war. And yes, what we're talking about is an end of conflict and an end of claims. So putting the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to bed. I think it's difficult when we talk about peace, because peace implies an end of all violence. And I think it's unrealistic to expect that the day after there's a peace agreement, everything will be quiet. But we are talking about the end of all claims, and that would put the conflict to bed.
Is U.S. leadership on this issue not enough without a fundamental change in the dynamics directly between the Israeli and Palestinian leadership?
Well, U.S. leadership is a necessary ingredient, but it's insufficient. It's insufficient without leadership on the Israeli and Palestinian side that are actually willing to make the sacrifices. And there are sacrifices. There are very tough decisions that need to be made, clear choices ahead of these next leaders, that they do need to take some difficult decisions. But without U.S. leadership, it's very unlikely that they'll even be able to get there. The good news is that the majority of Israeli leadership and Palestinian leadership does support a two-state solution. And so you do have the political will or and the policy support, but you do need a political infrastructure that allows for that to move forward, and strong U.S. leadership can provide that.
Much has been made of the spate of recent announcements by the Israeli government of plans to expand Israeli settlements on the West Bank. Are these settlements a non-issue, as Prime Minister Netanyahu has argued, simply a matter of expanding Israel's presence in an area that will ultimately become a part of Israel in any two-state deal, or are they a real, if not the primary, obstacle to peace?
Well, I think when you're negotiating over a pizza pie, and one of the parties in the negotiation is eating the pizza as you're negotiating, it's certainly an issue, and that's what's happening here. Even if Israel decided to only build—
You're talking about the Israelis eating the pizza.
Right. The Israelis are eating the pizza as they're negotiating the pizza pie with the Palestinians. And even if you don't think— even if they're only building in areas that will ultimately end up as part of Israel, that sends a very strong signal that the Israelis are not serious about peace and they're not serious about these negotiations. And that makes it very difficult, again, politically, for the Palestinians to stay inside of the negotiations framework. Settlements are a major obstacle to peace, but they're also a major obstacle to the peace process.
Again, the number to join our conversation with Steve Krubner of J Street, 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002. There is currently a draft circulating of a resolution that the Palestinians plan to have the Jordanians present to the UN Security Council sometime in the coming months that would call for the establishment of a Palestinian state by 2016. There's a lot of apprehension about the UN when it comes to dealing with Israel and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Why is this? We touched on this earlier in the segment, but I don't think we got into the why people don't trust the UN on this issue.
Again, Paul, there's been a long history of anti-Israel bias at the United Nations in several bodies, including the General Assembly. There's been a disproportionate focus on Israel and on this conflict relative to all the other conflicts that are taking place around the world. And so there's a real distrust for dealing with Israel through the United Nations.
That having been said, is it possible that any UN action could be a force for good when it comes to advancing a two-state solution?
Yeah, I think it's really important for Israel and friends of Israel to realize that in order for Israel to survive as both a democratic state, as the Jewish homeland. In order for that to continue, Israel needs a Palestinian state alongside it. And so if the United Nations can create a framework that can give Palestinians the can give voice to their aspirations for self-determination, I think that we're talking about positive movement forward.
And this is certainly something that J Street supports. Your organization claims it's redefining what it means to be pro-Israel in America. How do you measure your success in doing that?
Look, traditionally being pro-Israel meant agreeing with everything that the Israeli government put forward. And as we see now with the Israeli elections, the government changes. The average prime minister in Israel only lasts 2.3 years. It's not very long, so you're seeing a lot of different policies coming out of Israel. We believe, actually, that to be pro-Israel is to support the people of Israel, the security of Israel, the democracy of Israel, the values on which the state was founded. And so we define being pro-Israel slightly differently. We define it also as being pro-peace because, as I mentioned earlier, Israel can't survive without a peace agreement, without a two-state solution. And so what we're doing is we're working in Congress and in the American Jewish community to create political space in America for strong U.S. leadership to end the conflict. And so we measure our success based on the penetration that we're having both in both communities, in Washington and in the American Jewish community, in advancing that ball.
How many people in Israel believe that Israel can exist peacefully without a two-state solution?
Well, the majority of Israelis support a two-state solution. Where it gets a little hazy is how many of them actually believe it's possible to achieve a two-state solution. And that's, again, where the question of leadership comes into play. In terms of how many Israelis believe that Israel can actually survive without a two-state solution, if you look at the current, well, it's no longer current, but the Knesset before it dissolved last week, the majority of that Knesset, upwards of 70 seats, supported a two-state solution and were willing to move forward. So you had a majority in the Knesset, even while the government seemed very hesitant or seemed to be sending signals, despite its rhetoric, about its seriousness about a two-state solution.
And here in Pittsburgh, J Street has a very active presence. Can you talk about the Pittsburgh chapter and their advocacy within the Jewish community and to the elected officials who represent this community?
Sure. Hundreds of people have been involved in J Street Pittsburgh. They've come through J Street programming here, whether it's advocacy or educational programming, meeting with members of Congress both here and in Washington. And part of this is very important for J Street's overall goals. J Street basically needs to change the American Jewish community and in the halls of Washington, and that can't be done by lobbyists sitting in Washington. It has to be done by constituents. Members of Congress want to hear from their constituents, and the J Street Pittsburgh chapter has been very successful in giving voice to those constituents and providing a vehicle to make sure that the perspective that Israel needs a two-state solution and American leadership to help them get there exists broadly among the American Jewish community.
And with the breakdown of U.S.-led negotiations, the rise in violence, a weakened and divided Palestinian leadership, the increasing influence of the right wing in Israel, where do you find hope and the motivation to go on fighting for a two-state solution?
Look, what I'm about to say is probably the most important thing I can say on this segment, which is that there is no alternative for resolving the conflict than a two-state solution. So my hope comes from the fact that responsible leaders on both sides recognize that reality. The people recognize it. For the most part, the parameters of an agreement are essentially known, which just makes it all the more tragic that people are dying on both sides in the interim. But knowing that the leadership recognizes it and that there really is no alternative gives me hope. This is something that has to happen in order for Israel to survive as a democratic state, as the homeland of the Jewish people, and also to give the Palestinians the opportunity for their own self-determination in a state of their own.
I caught sight of a Twitter question, which is now no longer on my screen, but which referenced the birth rate, referenced a timetable based on the birth rate of Palestinians in the Middle East. How does that impact all of this?
It impacts it in what's called the demographic question, which is basically looking at the land between the Mediterranean Sea and the Jordan River. How many Jews are there and how many Palestinians are there? And different demographers will give you different answers. It's very difficult because there hasn't been a very good census on the Palestinian side in many, many years, if ever. But some demographers, the most distinguished demographers, would say that actually even today there are more Palestinians than there are Jews between the river and the sea. And so the question becomes, one day, if the Palestinians stop asking for a two-state solution and start demanding one man, one vote, let's just all live together, then what happens? That's when Israel needs to choose, do we want all the land? do we want to be a Jewish state or do we want to be a democracy? Because you can't have three in that equation when you're no longer the majority. And when that day comes, it's going to be very, very difficult, which is why there's such urgency now to address this question while both peoples and both leaderships want a two-state solution.
On a different subject, on Capitol Hill, there's been a lot of attention focused lately on the issue of whether or not and when to bring new sanctions against Iran in the absence of a deal yet having been reached by the P5 plus one that would prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. Many say that Iran is just using negotiations to buy time while they continue to build their nuclear capacity. When is time spent on negotiations enough?
Yeah, what I'm going to say now I think is really important, which is that a negotiated deal is the only way for us to ensure that Iran does not develop a nuclear weapon. I want to stress that as negotiations progress right now, there's actually unprecedented monitoring, supervision, and restrictions on Iran that didn't exist prior to these negotiations. So the U.S. and the P5 plus one are actually getting something right now in the interim as negotiations continue that we didn't have before negotiations came. So a push to increase sanctions now by Congress would actually undermine these negotiations. It would end up weakening the current sanctions regime, and it would be to the detriment of both the United States' security, but also all those concerned about a nuclear-armed Iran.
We're talking with J Street Chief of Staff Steve Krubner, who is speaking in Pittsburgh tonight at the Jewish Community Center in Squirrel Hill. Talk about, before we wrap this up, what you'll be discussing.
One of the things that I'm going to be looking at tonight is these current elections. It was very interesting. I booked my flight out here 3 weeks ago before the elections had even been scheduled. And one of the things that's so interesting about speaking about the Middle East and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is there's no status quo. Things are constantly changing. As much as people want on different sides to just pause and coast, it's impossible. Things are constantly shifting. And so tonight I'll be talking a little bit about what's been happening over the past several months. We've seen an uptick in violence and what's led to these elections and what could possibly come out of them, whether the negotiations swing right or swing left.
Are these negotiations and the election, is it coming at a bad time just based on, this has been a very violent year, in particular within recent months? Would it be, and I don't know if it's merely anything more than just a hypothetical at this point, but would it be your preference that this was happening at a time when cooler heads might prevail?
I actually think that when things get violent and people start demanding change, it's good to give an outlet for that change. It does provide a renewed sense of hope that things in the country, in Israel, will shift. It also provides hope for the Palestinians that things in Israel might shift and that there might be actually room to move forward. So I don't think the timing is bad, and I hope that cooler heads do prevail through the elections. Prime Minister Netanyahu has continually made a strong case that he is the candidate that can best bring security to Israel. And because of what we've seen over the past several months, both with the war last summer, but also the uptick in violence over the past several months, I think he can no longer make that claim. And so I do think we will see a change in this next election.
J Street Chief of Staff Steve Krubner joining us here in Studio A. He's speaking in Pittsburgh at the Jewish Community Center this evening. Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Paul.
Coming up, we'll look at how one area school is engaging more women in computer science. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.